Or is that just Pokemon? That might just be Pokemon. Okay, yeah, it's the Pokemon video game.
So,
all right.
So are you saying Pokemon is Brigadoon?
Oh. Well, I mean, the main character is a lot of people think he's just in a coma. Did you not know? Like, and that's why he's just like 13 in forever. And why his world is full of magical creatures and...
I thought he was 13 forever because it's a cartoon. And every...
He's not real.
Like, every cartoon character ever has stayed the same age.
Well, maybe he's a real person and... He's only a cartoon because he's in a coma.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to stop this and I'm going to say greetings, Apropos, and buckle up for the sex. It's the Apropos of Nothing podcast.
With your host,
Salsa.
James.
And the special guest.
Me, Sarah.
Yay!
Hi.
All right, let's go back to this.
All right.
Or do we want to drinks first?
Drinks, yeah.
All right, we'll do drinks first.
All right.
What are you drinking, James?
I picked up a Modelo Chelada. It's a mango chile.
Chichow.
Yeah.
All right. Is it a spicy?
We're about to find out.
Oh, okay.
Not yet. It's like it has the pepper body to it, but it doesn't have like the spice, the punch.
Okay.
I don't know. It's not what I was hoping.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry.
I don't really know how to... I can't just, like, go add Tabasco to my beer.
You can.
Why not?
I mean, well, I can.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's going to add the flavor that I'm hoping.
Only one way to find out. For science. For science,
you must.
James.
You must.
We'll maybe try that after the break.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you have a beverage, Sarah?
I have water.
Water's good.
An excellent beverage.
That is, I am consuming Dr. Pepper and just Dr. Pepper with no alcohol in it tonight because we'll talk about it a little bit later. I wounded myself, and adding alcohol to my blood system is probably not the best idea right now. So
you don't want to get alcohol in your blood system. You don't want to get blood in your alcohol system either way.
So
new.
All right.
Near.
So James is the lush tonight.
Yeah. Well, that's. I'm comfortable with this.
All right. We were talking about how Pokemon and Brigadoon are the same thing.
Right. Once every couple years, Pokemon reappears. But also, they could just...
But I mean, like, that's...
Both be... Like, the fan theory for both could be that they only appear when the narrator is in a coma.
But...
Ash Ketchum was hit by a car.
Yes,
I'm telling you.
I'm sorry. This is such a stretch that I can't even... I'm trying to figure out which way to destroy this theory... First.
I mean, this is a popular fan theory. This isn't just on me. This is a
stupid fan theory.
Yes.
Brigadoon comes back for... Is it one day? Or is it 1 week? Or I can't remember exactly.
It's 1 week in a month or 2 weeks a year. It's the Army Reserve of cities.
That's not... A thing?
No. Wait. No. I'm.
No. I honestly don't remember how long Brigadoon sticks around. If it's like 1 day or
7 weekends.
A week. Oh yeah.
Between August.
And
October.
Fest being Brigadoon. Fest being Brigadoon. Much better theory. That stands.
Oh, okay.
Pokemon? No. Like that? No. There's no.
But Fest also appears because I got a concussion.
There's no similar. Yes.
What?
No, that's the reason we work at
James,
Fest.
Every year.
We have a concussion.
No, I figure I'm still just in there.
Yep.
It's anachronistic solipsism.
Yep, just mid-August every year, James gets a concussion.
I suffer from. also, anachronistic solipsism is my steam-powered giraffe cover band.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
There we go. Yeah, so,
so
Tulsa.
Yes.
Tell us about this tragedy that happened, and then Sarah can fill you in on the discussion that that we had.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so, well, this is...
Oh, Sarah, what are your pronouns, by the way?
Oh, I use she, her pronouns.
Okay.
Thanks for
Thank
asking.
You. Yeah, yeah. I'm he, him. Salsa is...
Also he,
salsa.
Him.
Yeah.
Salsa is cool. Salsa. Yes, no, that is probably more accurate. No, it's not a huge story to tell. I wish I had an epic tale of danger and dragons and sorcery, but unfortunately, it all came down to me removing the... So we've got a gas grill in our backyard that is piped directly into the house's gas line,
mm-hmm.
Which is really nice, which you don't never have to fill the tank or anything like that, but mm-hmm. it has been there for... a very long time, and it is old and rusted out and not in good condition. Like, it's pretty bad. The inside is just like the grating on the inside there's a hole in the middle where it has literally rusted out completely.
Dear Liza.
Yeah. It's pretty bad. So we got a new one, and I am removing the old one. So, you know, I took the top off, and I pulled the post out of, you know, and cement block out of the ground and everything like that, and I was disconnecting the gas lines, or trying to, and the connector was just being a little bastard, and I was... wrenching on it with pliers in one hand and using a screwdriver in the other hand to try to kind of twist and get separation on it, and things slipped and my finger went whoop and I ripped a real not insignificant chunk of flesh off of my thumb, and you know, it was one of those like you know, the adrenaline hits you, and you're just like, okay, I gotta take care of this, and, you know, you get inside, you get it dressed, and you cleaned and everything like that, and it's after it's all dressed and cleaned, it's like, okay, go outside and put the tools away and everything like that, and then you come inside, and you're like, okay, now the adrenaline crash is coming. And then it's like, I'm just gonna go lay down on the couch now for a while and fight off waves of nausea.
So,
but yeah, no, that passed. I've thankfully, because of doing Sideshow, I have learned how to, you know, mitigate that a significant amount and make it go away faster, and learn to just deal with it. So it was, you know, half an hour on the couch and then I felt better. But yeah, it is, you know, like I said, fairly. It's not a huge, like, in terms of, like, severity, it's not a very severe wound, but in terms of, like, real estate, it's fairly large. So it's just like, yeah, I'm not going to have alcohol and thin my blood until that, you know, has a chance to heal a little bit.
So, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
Smart move.
Yeah.
We won't go much further into that in case people listening are not very happy with this topic of conversation. But
well, we could also discuss the story that Sarah and I created.
Yes,
when I told her that we might not be recording tonight, she had responded.
Oh yeah, I thought this is just an elaborate ruse to keep me from actually being on your podcast.
Mm-hmm. And what we determined is that you, Salsa, and I. That the two of us had developed a plot that was extraordinarily convoluted, mm-hmm. and involved selling bits and pieces of your fingers to young people involved with occultism.
Okay.
For some reason, and then you hadn't shown me the second part of the plan, but I had seen the drawings,
right,
and they were very good.
Right.
And then it was revealed that Sarah was the villain, the mastermind, mm-hmm, all along. And Sarah, what was your grand plan?
Oh, once I have all of Salsa's fingers attached to my fingers, I can juggle anything and no one can stop me.
That's true, yeah. It's like learning to eat with chopsticks. Now you can pick up anything. Exactly, yeah.
And where does the fictitious part start?
Oh, I don't think it is fictitious.
No.
Oh, you hadn't gotten that? Okay.
No.
Cool.
Yeah. I guess the fictitious part would be the sassy unicorn best friend.
yeah, because that unicorn best friend is not sassy at all. It's absolute sweetheart.
Not even a little bit.
Absolute sweetheart.
Yeah. It's Angela, really.
Yeah.
Is the Yes, I too am charmed by this idea. Okay. So
you write that. We're casting Angela.
Yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah, Sassy Unicorn Best Friend is gonna be the hit of next year's Fringe.
Absolutely.
Yep. Good. Good, good.
What else? Convergence was this last weekend.
Yeah.
I did not attend Convergence as an attendee, but I did go to Convergence as a performer. And did a show on the main stage. I was involved in Big Fun Radio Fun Time.
Excellent.
A show I love doing. And we had a really good sound guy, and so I could actually hear myself, which is amazing, because this may be the first time in all of the Big Funs I've ever done where I can actually hear myself while I'm doing this. Well, I was sitting next to Chad Dutton, who was doing keys, and
and
he was like really like he had his own monitor. He brought his own monitor, and he was like, "No, we're getting stuff into this monitor, and I need a better mix through here." And so he kept like micromanaging that until we got a good mix, and then I was like, oh, I can hear everything now. This is amazing.
Beautiful.
So, but it was a great. We had a lot of the usual suspects for Big Fun Radio Fun Time. Tim Wick, obviously, Jeffrey Brown, and Chad Dutton were part of the music group.
Amazing.
We had Wendy Bowlesby and Dawn Krasnowski and Angela. And Christopher Jones and Charles Hubble, I think, is everyone. If I'm forgetting somebody, I am very, very sorry. But yeah, it was a great cast, funny scripts as always. One parodying the Olympics. If it was like if superheroes were in the Olympics.
Ooh,
it was pretty fantastic. Like there was, like they were talking.
Oh,
we go now to the 100 meter dash, and it was like, you know, it was like Wally West and Quicksilver and the Flash and Quicksilver, a different one this time. I'll check on that. All competing in the 200 meter dash. Who won? Well, we don't actually have the technology fast enough to be able to measure who won, so everybody got a medal.
Jeez.
And it was like, the Atlantean delegation has won all of the gold medals in swimming, with the exception of the breaststroke I can't remember the name, because they think they're silly swimming strokes and they just refuse to do them.
Front crawl or something?
Not the crawl. The butterfly. Butterfly, that's what it was.
Oh, yeah.
It was just like, they refuse to do the butterfly and the breaststroke because they think they're stupid and they just refuse to do them. And, but like, it was, and like, Oliver Queen and Hawkeye were, you know, tied for the archery competition, and
Ash
like just, you know, it was just all these different Olympic events, you know, and it was just all the superheroes tying for everything. It was great. Yeah, and then we had a sketch about D&D characters sitting around in the tavern, you know, after a campaign, you know, the actual D&D characters, and the wizard starts to question whether they should actually kill kobolds or not, you know, because they're like, you know, well, yes, kobolds are evil, they're marauding, and it's like, are they really though? Has anybody actually seen a kobold marauding?
Because saying they go place to place murdering things and stealing treasure. Well, we don't know anyone else like that.
Yeah, but they're just like a kobold. Like I dropped my keys and killed a kobold. Like it takes six of them just to knock on her door loud enough for my grandma to hear it. How much damage are they really doing? Like, and if we're killing 400 kobolds in a dungeon and they just keep coming back, do kobolds have families? And like. Like they eventually, yeah, and they eventually decided that kobolds have families, and they were going to start a widows and orphans fund for kobolds. But the only way they could fund, the widows and orphans fund for kobolds was by campaigning. So they're they're killing kobolds to save kobolds. Kobolds.
No.
Yeah, it was great.
This really reminds me of a comic that's no longer available on the internet. A long, long time ago in an internet far, far away. These two people are trying to figure out a get-rich-quick product, and the first thing that comes to mind is roach motels, and they're like, yeah, what a great product that is. Roaches come in, or roaches check in, and they don't check out. Like, wow, that's great. But we have to do something more and better than that. So it's the roach... family fun eatery. They check in, play some video games, have a pizza together, and then they don't check out. And then the other person tops that. It's the Roach Amusement Park. They check in, they have a wonderful day filled with fun and laughter, riding rides together, eating funnel cakes, and then they're all killed.
And they don't check out.
And then they have a moment and they're both like, oh, wow, that's really, ooh, that's dark. And then it shows them at a booth that sells roach hospitals.
Oh.
and someone's like, why would I want my roaches
better?
Better. And one of the guys is like, what, you want sick roaches coughing on your food? That's it. End scene. It was amazing. Yeah.
So yeah, no, I love doing...
No, that's what that reminds me of.
I love doing
big, I love this
fun.
Kobold idea.
I always feel like the world's biggest imposter on that stage with huge, like, names and people I've seen on TV and things like that. And then I'm over in the corner, like, hi. You've never heard of me before.
I believe I may understand.
Yeah. But no, it's good. We're gonna do one more on Thursday. Mm-hmm. So these are both fringe shows, even though the venue for the first one was Convergence, it was still technically a fringe show.
Sure.
The second one is going to be all online.
Yeah. Also, Celso, you belong on stages. That's you are a talented performer who has put a lot of work into your art.
Oh no, I believe that I deserve to be on a stage. I just sometimes feel like I shouldn't be on a stage with them. You know what I mean?
Just swallow a sword in front of them, and
I know, right?
That'll even things up. That's
yeah.
then they won't feel like they belong on a stage with you, and it's fine.
Anyway, that's what I did. What about you, James?
I took Sunday off to relax and go swimming, which was
never heard of
amazing.
It.
Because my Saturday was pretty flippin' full. Did a lot of stuff around booth, getting everything ready. Claimed my campsite Speaking of Fest, we're very excited for the platform this year because we lost one of our pieces of billboard fabric, and we have no idea what the replacement billboard is, but it's probably Chris Lindahl, and we can either put that image side in where he's hugging us and we're haunted by his face, as we were by the woman on the Treasure Junction, Casino Junction something, anyway, our like internal gargoyle. But or we can point it outward and just like freak everyone else out, which I think is what we're leaning towards. But it might be anything.
See, I like the more intimate, like secret Chris Lindahl hug.
Secret Lindahl, secret Lindahl. Oh yeah, all right. Whew, good. Yeah.
With a festival day, and you just walk into your tent, and you're like, I'm so tired and worn out. Thanks, Chris Lindahl. Thank you.
What a weird letter to write to that man.
Thank you for believing in me, Chris Lindahl.
We received a fruit basket and a thank you card, and I am confused by all of the contents. I don't know.
She's like, "Where's James?
Who these people are?
Where's James?" We go into his tent, and he's just like up against the wall, hugging the wall. Like,
someone hugged me. Someone finally hugged me. Yeah, just thrilled. Wow, that's dark. All right, but yeah, no, just tried to take it easy because I know that I'm like starting this weekend. I'm not gonna have an easy weekend for a while.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be pretty blown up. Especially just because, like, a lot, like physically I've atrophied, but also socially I've atrophied. One of the things,
James,
that really wore me out.
That's
on.
So adorable that you used to think you used to be socially adept.
Not adept, just adapted. Just like used to it, just used to being this awkward. Yeah, and now it's a strain. I remember what it was like in high school to be this guy, and yeah. So part of the thing that tired me out.
By the way, Sarah, you're more than welcome to jump in at any point.
By all
time.
Means.
I'm just enjoying listening.
Oh, okay. I don't want you to feel like we're ignoring you or anything.
No, not at all.
All right.
But I got a chance to watch a couple of anime with a friend, introduce a good friend to a couple of shows, including one which is, I want to say, exactly my speed. Hakume and Mikoshi, A Tiny Life in the Woods. It's about these little gnome-like creatures that live in a tiny house that's been carved into a tree with miniature furniture, and they make friends with bugs and things. And it's super cozy and real sweet. And I think they're a lesbian couple. But it's never really explicitly stated. It's got kind of that Miyazaki like warm, cute fondness to it instead.
I
wanna watch it's real good. If you find it someplace, I wholeheartedly suggest to you and the listeners.
What was it called again?
I believe it's Hakume
and Mikoshi.
Okay.
Yeah. A Tiny Little Life in the Woods. It's very cute, and like it's warm and loving. It's good, yeah.
It's funny because you were like, "This is completely up my alley," and I was like, "It's going to be tiny and wholesome, isn't it?" And just nail upon the top.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, and we also went through a selection of others. Cells at Work, which is fun, and mildly scientifically accurate if all of the cells in your body were people. And then it's fun anyway.
If we completely ignore science, it's scientifically accurate.
Exactly that. Well, things like the red blood cells are delivering nutrients and oxygen, or they're moving carbon dioxide to the lungs. It shows them doing their jobs and things like that, which is kind of nice. It's very cool. But then the one that was the big hit, aside from Hakume and Mikochi, was Snow White with the red hair. And it's kind of a fairy tale-ish thing, but it's mostly like a romance novel. But it's great. It's really good. It's it doesn't have many of those like super dramatic dun 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 moments that you usually get in romantic things. There's no like hilarious romantic misunderstandings to the extent that they're uncomfortable, only to the point that they have good payoff, which I think is really perfect. And it's really it's great. So I recommend that one as well. Yeah. So those were some of the anime, and they're amazing. So that was most of what I did with my leisurely weekend.
The last leisurely weekend.
Well, it's not even the last leisurely weekend for like 2 months. It's the last leisurely weekend for like 3 months. My entire October is entirely booked already, because everyone's like, oh, well, you're busy on all of these weekends. Let's do stuff in October.
Yep.
So I've got a camping trip. Yeah. I've got a vacation. I've got a land party. I've got everything else. So and then in addition to that teardown of the platform and whatever Chris Lindahl gargoyle we end up with, all of that stuff, that's all of that is tucked neatly into October. Shit. So there's that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's good things.
Yeah,
but still busy.
It is. Yeah, it is. But yeah, and then November, I'm taking a vacation to a different state by plane with my family, and I'm just I'll sleep when I'm dead. It's apparently the answer is that's yeah.
It's kind of how my life has been for the past decade or so.
You're a dad.
Yeah, also you're, that.
You chose this.
Yeah.
Have you been watching anything or playing anything recently, Sarah?
I not really. I don't really put time into that right now.
That's okay.
That's okay.
What did I recently watch that I really liked? there was something. What was it? I binge watched Loki.
Ooh. And we just finished up with my wife and I just finished that up just
we're being
few days I really ago. Liked it.
Yeah. Being careful about spoilers, but yeah, that is a great show.
It's set
also up. I love the aesthetic.
Yes. Yeah,
it set up the next phase of the MCU universe very nicely. Mm-hmm.
The Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Yes.
Apart from that, I've been playing on my Nintendo Switch a game called Baba Is You, which is a little puzzle game. I like puzzle games a lot. Yeah. Just as something sort of quiet to do in the evening.
What, yeah. Baba? B-A-B-A?
B-A-B-A okay. Is You.
Baba Is You.
And it's a bunch of like logic puzzles, but yes. In a video game format.
Sure.
I like that.
And it's very like brain challenging, but also enjoyable. So yeah, that's what I've been doing, and trying to read 5 books at once, which never goes well.
I'm right there with you on that. Mm-hmm. I've now added books to the list that I am attempting.
Oh yeah, my list never gets shorter, no matter how much I read.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, simultaneously attempting disaster. So, yeah. So there's that. That's good. What are some of the books? What are the kinds of things that you like to read?
They're all in a stack in my room, and I don't remember what they are now. I am reading, but I've been reading it for months because this is how life is going. I'm reading Harpo Speaks, which is Harpo Marx's sort of autobiography memoir thing. And I also started, what was it called? My mom was like, I thought you might like this book about American Circus. So I got it for you from the library, but now I can't remember what it's called. I'm just going to Google it real quick. Let's see if it comes up. Oh, right. It's called The Battle for the Big Top.
Oh.
And it's about, like, all the early American circuses.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I'm only a couple chapters in. It's pretty good so far. Maybe finish it by the time I have to give it back to the library. We'll see.
Reading it in one hand while driving with the other, trying to finish the last chapter on your way, to dangerously swerving.
There's risk in circus. Just drive safely, please.
Yeah.
If you are interested, I have a variety, surprise, surprise, I have a variety of circus books that you are more than welcome to borrow at some point.
Yes, please.
I for one, am shocked.
I know, right?
What are some of your favorites that you have, Salsa?
I think my favorite is, it's called Secrets of the Sideshow by, I think it's Joe Nickel?
I have that one.
That's a fantastic book. That is a really, really dang book, good book.
It's on my to-read list.
Yeah. That's a fantastic one. Memoirs of a Sword Swallower is another really good one. Tom Wall has two books that are both really good. One of them is a juggling...
What it is and how to do it.
Yep, that one. That one's
I've got
that one right over here, right here on my desk.
That's one of the ones I'm reading, also.
And then
slowly trying to work my way through it.
And then Tom also has a history of juggling book that's really good. Yeah, these are all very good. Anyway, what else?
I'll come borrow some.
Yes, do. Well, we've been going for about half an hour. Do we want to take a break?
I think that sounds like a tremendous plan.
Yeah.
I can get my crocheting project set up so that I can be better and more attentive during our guest segment.
Cool. All right. We'll be right back. We're going to be right back.
Hey, everybody. You should like us on Facebook, apropos of nothing. You could follow us on Twitter at AON Podcast. Or you could join our Steam group at AON Podcast. Search for Apropos of Nothing.
I just felt so happy to see circus people doing their things.
Mm-hmm.
Like at home again, you know?
Yeah.
There was a movie that made me want to learn to do circus stuff, and then
was it like Water for Elephants or Roustabout or
Sim and the Clown?
I'm not familiar with that.
What's that?
It's the story of this young kid named Sim who is desperate to be a clown and ends up talking to an old performer who kind of gives him the Mr. Miyagi style training of like, oh, you want to be a clown? All right. Well, these clothes need to be washed. So start there.
By the way, I'm retroactively, we're back. I'm Salsa.
Oh, I'm James.
Oh, I'm Sarah.
No, like, I was looking for a good place to start, and this is already interesting, so I'm just going to start the audio a few minutes ago, and we'll just go right into this.
All right.
Anyway.
That sounds great. Yeah. But, he has this kid do a bunch of things, and eventually, you know, teaching him to juggle and teaching him to walk a wire and a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's a coming-of-age movie, but it's also one of those films, kind of like The Karate Kid, where you're watching someone go through a montage and getting better at things, which gave me very unreasonable expectations for teaching myself to juggle, which I attempted off and on for something like 30 years before eventually succeeding.
Well, see, the problem is juggling is incredibly easy. The difficult part is triggering the montage.
Oh. The weirdest, like, as much as Salsa is joking and being a complete jerk right now, that is honestly, I think, what happened, because it was the weekend of Mondo.
Mondo is absolutely a montage. Mondo is such a great montage.
Yeah. So, and it was while I was listening to music and, like, trying again and again, and then, like, yeah. It was that. And then that joyous moment of having a series of, like, four or five catches in a row, and then the overconfidence, and then everything that follows. Yeah. So have we told our listeners, with our sudden reappearance, have we told our listeners why we're discussing Circus Things?
Because Circus Things are awesome, to be, you know, first.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Well, they already know that. They're our listeners. So that's not news to them, but what would be news to them?
I don't know. You tell me.
Perhaps something about our guest.
What about me?
Sarah also likes Circus Things.
I do like Circus Things.
Yeah, there you go. That's the big reveal.
Okay, so James really sucks at this, so I will just go ahead. All right. Anyway, our guest Sarah is a burgeoning circus performer. Is that fair to say?
Well, yes and no.
Re-burgeoning.
Yeah.
Could we go with that?
Re-burgeoning.
I don't like it.
Okay, no. Yeah, if you don't like it, then
we
won't use it.
That was the guy that hosted Hollywood Squares.
If we don't like it, then you won't use it. just whatever.
I am a circus artist.
Yes, you are. We'll just go with that. Okay. Well, so how long have you been doing circus? Let's just go to the beginning.
Okay. So, my mother was a circus elephant, and she gave birth to me. No,
Dead.
I'm kidding.
Oh, no. That does explain the ears.
This is like the sequel to Big Fish.
So when I was a kid, I did gymnastics for a couple of years, like a lot of kids do in those like mom and tot classes. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I started walking around the house on my hands in a handstand. And when I was around 10 or 11, my mom was like, we have to do something about this. And she heard from a friend about Circus Juventus, which is a youth circus in St. Paul, Minnesota. And so she called them up and she asked if I could take a handstands class. And they were like, well, it's really kind of an advanced class. But she begged them to at least just look me over. And they agreed. So when I was, I was 10 or 11, my mom took me to Circus Juventus. and I met Chimge, who is still a coach there. But she was the handstands coach at the time, and she had me do a handstand, and she had me do a bridge, and she looked me over, and I guess, like, my form was not good, but it was a starting point.
Right, completely self-taught, yeah.
And it was, right, and it was acceptable. So I spent the next 6 years training and performing at Circus Juventus in a lot of different disciplines, but mostly hand balancing and chair stacking. I think I tried most of the things that they offered there probably at least once, except juggling, which is funny because now I'm working really hard on juggling. Yeah. So I was there for 6 years. And then I had to leave, unfortunately, due to an overuse injury. And so I was healing from that. Then I went to college, and I didn't have time to do very much else but college, you know, as college goes. And then I aged out of Circus Juventus because they are a youth circus. Once you hit, you know, college age roughly, they can't teach you anymore. They do have adult classes, but you can't perform. And they're really geared towards kids. So it wasn't the place for me anymore.
Is 17 their top?
I think it's like 18, okay. 18 or 19. My brain is telling me 21, but I'm not sure if that's correct or not.
I'm sure somebody's screaming at their computer right now.
They're like, no, you're wrong.
Stefan somehow, for some reason, knows, as he does all things. Senpai?
Yeah, so then I took a 12-year break. I think partly because I was too scared to come back to circus arts. It's really hard when you've been so invested in something and, like, had a dream. Had that dream sort of shattered to come back to it and, like, with the hope that, I don't know, maybe something can come of it. But I was working at the Renaissance Festival, and I met Benjamin Domas-Grew. And he's a circus person and a fantastic juggler and a really great clown and good human being. And he was offering a clowning workshop with Neil Skoy.
And I the two of them
took
together.
That workshop.
Jeez.
I took that workshop, and it rekindled sort of my courage and my interest and curiosity in circus arts. And so I found myself easing back into that world, first through juggling. And then I started taking classes at Zelias Aerial Arts Studio in Minneapolis. That was about a year and a half ago. And so I've been training there in different aerial apparatuses, and then now I'm also learning juggling from Benjamin Domas-Grew and Tom Wall, and his excellent book, Juggling What It Is and How to Do It, which is great for three-ball juggling. I'm taking handstand classes online from Lynn Lunny, and I'm getting back into chair acrobatics. So I'm really kind of like diving headfirst back into circus these past 2 years. I spent a lot of time just training and practicing.
It's been just being the fly on the wall on Facebook, because we can stalk people now with Facebook. It's been so, like, watching you rekindle your passion for, like, circus arts has in many ways, like, rekindled it in me as well, because I'm just like, you have so you have so much passion and love, like, you glow whenever you're talking about it, and it's just like, oh yeah, I used to be fresh faced like that. I could still be again. And
I don't think I could ever imagine a young and hopeful Salsa. I just don't. I disbelieve.
Salsa's way too bitter at this point. But no, genuinely, it has been like watching you, like, start to learn to juggle, and now you're just kicking ass, and it's just like,
yeah,
I should go get my juggling stuff out and practice again, because I haven't done it for a while.
Yes, also.
There is one.
Where's your weighted, juggling stuff?
There is one weighted exercise ball next to the left drawer on your desk.
Yeah, there's. Yeah. Where did? No, I moved it. I moved it.
Oh, okay. Those were the only ones I could really juggle with any great success.
Oh yeah, the weighted ones—they really stick to your hand, don't they?
Yeah, it's just something like much easier about those.
Here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are the ones I should
buy. I've been fortunate to be able to perform this summer since pandemic regulations have sort of eased up momentarily.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been trying to take advantage of that, and I'm performing. I've got some shows coming up in the next couple months. Ooh, what's also have?
They're like,
what are those?
Flush bowling balls.
Are those giant juggling bean bags?
They're giant juggling bean bags as big as my head.
Oh, wow.
That have seen better days.
You juggle them.
My thumb. I can't right now.
Not much better, no, but like a little better.
They are the four colored, you know, juggling bean bags that you see, except the like vinyl outside is peeling and pulling away because these things are old. But yeah, each one is as big as my head is.
Yeah,
I love these things.
Those are fantastic.
How do they juggle? Are they awkward?
They don't. Salsa is the one.
They honestly, because they are so floppy, you like catch them like you would catch almost like a big washcloth or a towel, where you like catch the main body of it and you just kind of get a grip as the rest of it
and flops
over around
your hand,
you know. So you just kind of grab. A handful, and the rest of it's just kind of flopping around.
It really teaches you to juggle children.
Very much so.
You just have to make sure that you're supporting the head.
They are easier than the bowling pins by a long shot.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
Wait, bowling pins?
Yeah. Where's my bowling pins?
What?
Well, after he figured out that it would be too difficult to swallow them, he decided to learn to juggle.
Where are my bowling pins?
Probably at the end of an alley somewhere.
Yeah.
Not juggling clubs, bowling pins.
No,
like
actual bowling pins.
Yep. Yep.
That's actually how I used to do
These are all spectacular visuals for this podcast.
Yeah, I know, right?
By the way,
but it's how I would build my stamina. Is I would juggle bowling pins,
because they're heavy.
They're heavy and they just wreck your wrists like a lot. Like when I was juggling the bowling pins, I would juggle them for a minute, and then I would rest for a minute, and then I would juggle them for a minute, and then rest for a minute, and like until I just couldn't anymore. And the muscle that went along like from your thumb and across the top of your like it was. Huge.
I should do that for fencing training because that's also that same wrist control.
Here, my bowling pins are over here.
Visual jokes on an audio podcast. That's how we roll.
Great.
Yep, here they are. Yeah. Bowling pins.
Bowling.
Wow.
Daytona. Yeah.
Juggling these is a basket.
How are they weighted, like, compared to a normal juggling club?
Badly.
They're very badly. Yeah, these hit your hand pretty heavy. You don't want to be wearing rings when you're wearing these.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, and they're tough to get started, but once you get them in the air, once you get them going, then you're just like, oh, this is actually rather easy. And then 30 seconds later, you're like, kill me.
Great.
I wonder if learning to juggle helped my fencing.
Probably.
In general.
The wonderful thing about juggling is it's just one of those like mind and body enhancing things. Mm-hmm. Like, it really helps you with hand-eye coordination. It really helps you with rhythm. People...
And focus?
Focus.
Well, because it was also after I learned to juggle badly. I'm still not great at it. I need a ton more practice and a kind of dedication that I just find it difficult to muster unless I'm learning five languages because I can't do anything the easy way. But I think, you know, giving myself a challenge to learn that and like get better at it would be the way. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it was learning to juggle that helped me with my stage combat, that helped me with everything, you know, both for reasons of, you know, being able to do multiple things at the same time and track them, but also just confidence.
Sure,
Yeah, so no, I like every time. Well, and Sarah, you're up to four objects. Is that?
I'm working on four balls, and eventually four clubs and four rings. But yeah,
we may have discussed this mildly in the olden times, the before times. But can you discuss the difference between juggling three things and four things?
It's like, harder.
Yeah.
There's one more object than the other.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Yeah.
Huh. No, that makes so much sense.
It's more things to keep track of in the air. Where to start with this? I'm not a juggling expert. But with three balls, the pattern that the balls follow is also different than with four balls. So mm-hmm. with three balls, each object crosses from one hand to the other when it's thrown. And with four mm-hmm. balls, you're throwing and catching each object in with the same hand. So the objects in a four ball pattern are staying on their own sides, which means it's a little bit more tricky to control the path of the ball, or it mm-hmm. takes a little bit different of a throw. I find it harder to control, but I am still new to working with four balls. Yeah, I think those are the main differences, probably. I don't know. Salsa, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, like she said, it's because you have an even number of hands in order for the pattern, for the rhythm to stay consistent. Whenever you have an odd number of things, the pattern has to cross. So 3, 5, 7, it's a crossing pattern, the basic pattern. But whenever you have an even number of things, 2, 4, 6, 8, each one travels, instead of a crossing cascade, you each one is moving in a circular, one-sided shower.
It's called a fountain. Yep. A fountain throw.
But
I had no idea.
But because your catch and throw is still in the same circular out to in pattern, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. the throw is instead of naturally kind of throwing across your body, what you're actually doing is kind of flicking your fingertips and pulling it back. So even though you're swinging your hand towards the inside, you're actually throwing mm-hmm. off your fingertips and throwing the ball out instead of across.
Yeah. And so if I throw two in one hand, they're still going in like this oval sort of shape.
Yeah.
Instead of crossing like that.
Watching you do that so easily is just. Yeah, it's
lots of time put into
lots
it.
Lots and lots of time. Yeah, that's the thing is. Getting to watch you learn this, even if it's just in you know a couple of updates every once in a while, getting to see this, as Salsa said, has been a fantastic thing. not just to see that you're advancing and you're doing well, but also, like, for me, watching you do that, it's still hard for me to remember how much time you've put in because of how easy you make it look. But then I go back and, yeah, she's posted videos like all of these things, all of this time that she spent learning to juggle, learning to work with chairs, learning to work with the you do the lira, right?
I do, yeah.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite aerial apparatuses right now.
Yeah.
The thing about handstands and I guess juggling as well, when I post a video and people are like, "Wow, so good," I feel like I have to justify, like, yes, but I put so much time into it.
That's the performer.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's
no. We can't just accept compliments. No.
No.
That's just say thank you and move on. What are you, mad?
Thank you.
No. Then it will seem like I deserve it.
Yeah.
What the hell?
I think also with social media, it's comparing yourself to the best of other people or whatever they're putting out there. And so I know all of my drops. I know all of my, like, falling out of handstands. I know all of this, all of the times I've failed at a skill in the process of learning it. But what I'm seeing from other people on social media is just their successes for the most part.
Right.
Or like all the really cool things that I can't do yet, but hope to do someday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's, that is the eternal performer's conundrum of, you know, like, we look at other people, but we are seeing their finished product. But when we look at our product, we see all of this, the bumps and bruises along the way, and so it never feels good enough than their finished product. And it's yeah.
I wonder if anyone that would ever watch an act or a routine that was about that process of learning, and like if you deliberately included like failures in your tricks or things that you were trying to do and then slowly improved throughout the act.
Well, I mean, I think that was Pizpor's whole act, but the...
So, years ago, when I was still with Fondazi and we had our, like, two fiddlers ago, it was...
This is my new favorite measurement.
No, this is important.
Measurements of time in fiddlers.
This is important because it was her first season at Fest as our fiddler. And I was like, oh, I would love to learn. I've always wanted to learn how to play the fiddle. Could you teach me? And she was like, yeah, absolutely. We can, you know, during our downtime between shows and stuff, I can teach. I was like, awesome, this is great. And so, like, one day we were between shows, and I grabbed my fiddle, and she grabbed her fiddle, and I was like, okay, let's go. And she was like, where are we going? And I was like, out on the street. And she was like, I thought we were going to teach you how to play fiddle. And I was like, yeah, let's go. And she was like,
wow.
She was like, you want to be out there on the street with people watching me teach you how to play fiddle? I was like, yes, of course. Naturally. And she was like, yeah, but you're not going to be any good. And I was like, yeah.
Of course not.
And she's like, and you're okay with people seeing that? Is anybody going to want to see that? And I was like, oh my God, you have no idea. We're going to have a huge crowd. Are you kidding? And we did. It was her trying.
Wow.
It was her trying to teach me, who had never touched a fiddle before, how to learn how to play violin. And I would, like, she'd be like, "No, you're doing this wrong." And I'd be like, "Okay, how about this?" And it'd be like, I'd get a note out, and the crowd would be like, "Yeah, good job, good job, good for you." And it was like they were invested in, like, all of my successes and all of the, oh, you almost had it on that, like all the successes and failures. They loved it. And
that would almost be an amazing...
What if we were just as invested in our own successes?
I know, right? but like she walked away from that session. She was like, "That is the weirdest thing I have ever seen." Most people do not want people looking at them when they are learning how to do something. But it was like, no, people love that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Peeling back the curtain, showing them the flaws. That's so fascinating. It's fascinating for me. I know that.
Yeah.
I was juggling in my front yard the other day, and a neighbor kid came over and asked me to do some tricks for her, and then asked me to teach her to juggle, which is like, what a dream to have.
Oh, I love it.
A wandering kid come by and take interest in what you're doing. But she asked me, "Do you ever make mistakes?" And I felt like that's such an interesting question for a 5-year-old to ask. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was like, yeah, all the time. but we don't really show that as performers very much, or we often try not to.
I wonder what kind of magic show it would be to have someone show a trick. You know, an illusion, do something with cards, right? One of the things that's pretty easy, you know, passing something from hand to hand secretly, whatever, the cup and ball, you know,
palming,
secret upside down card thing. And then they show that to the audience, and then the show of it is bringing someone up from the audience who 100% cannot do that. And then as they're doing tricks and other things like that, they're like, okay, this is what I'm going to have you practice. And you're going to practice this for the entire, you know, while I'm
that'd be interesting.
Sawing a person in half. So you're, and then they come back and they, all right, this is where we're at. And we're going to move on to the next thing. And they teach that person the illusion,
the and then at the end they do the thing. I was gonna say this started out sounding like a Penn and Teller show, honestly, but it's an interesting twist on that. That would be interesting.
That was another thing. Like, I being a clown, and I have the utmost respect for clowns, and just knowing Sarah does make me want to be a clown.
But not a mime. But, fuck that. No.
I am ridiculously proud of the terrible mime show that I put on.
Look, I'm okay with mimes, but as a juggler, there's a hierarchy, okay?
Wow, rude. Yeah, well, because
there's a natural order of things here.
Yeah, when you go to put mimes on top, clowns are like, "Hey," and when you go to put clowns on top, the mimes, they don't say anything.
Yeah,
so, that's, yeah. I also wanted to be a magician. And put on a series of really awful magic shows for my family as a stupid child that grew into a stupid adult.
Go ahead.
So every time we interacted out at Fest, and you just had these amazing ideas, or you were like, "Oh, this discarded gummy worm, I'm going to take a bite out of it, and then it's going to be my pet for a day," and that just becomes the entire thing. Like, the ability to generate that degree of shenanigans, I think, is really phenomenal. And
this is my favorite.
Yeah, I wanted to tell you that, like, your clowning is very good, and it makes me want to be a better clown.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, yeah. Are you doing shows that people can watch online or go to in person?
Yes. I'm not currently doing any online stuff. That might change in the future. But coming up, Benjamin Domaskrew and I will be at the Minnesota State Fair performing together as Yellow Apple Circus. for the first 3 days of the fair in the West End Plaza. And I think we're in the like morning, afternoon time. So people could see us there. We'll also be in Hastings, Minnesota with Tom Wall, the one and only.
Is he in town?
In September. Oh, no, he will be in September.
Oh, and I'm going to be busy with things, boo.
No, it's on a Tuesday, if that helps.
It does.
It's on the 28th in Hastings.
I may have to just rudely invite myself along.
Please do.
We just like the three of you are like, we're going to hang out and do clowny stuff, and I'm over here in the corner just going, hi, everyone. I'm here too.
Yeah.
Also, you have to teach me a sideshow thing, and then you're in.
Other than that,
He can teach you to eat stuff that people usually don't.
I already do that.
Like Brussels sprouts.
People like Brussels sprouts. My kids.
I like Brussels sprouts. My kids
like Brussels sprouts.
I like Brussels sprouts.
Side eye. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Otherwise, I don't have any immediate gigs. I'm open for booking if anybody wants to hire me.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need a juggler or a handstand artist or a clown or someone to stand around and yell random words from a dictionary. I can do all those things.
Is there a preferred
and more?
Is there a preferred way for people to get a hold of you if they are interested in doing such a thing?
Yeah. I think email would be best, or you can find me on Instagram and send me a message there.
You can post your Instagram link.
Plug your stuff and send me links.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm working on a website. I honestly should have one since I am a web designer and front-end developer, and I have no good excuse to not have one yet. Eventually, I'll have a website.
I feel like everybody has a pretty good excuse not to have shit together right now, but
it's true.
Yeah, and also it's not like you're busy with anything else. It's not like you're constantly
nothing else is happening.
Working on everything that we just discussed. Yeah. That's not getting in the way of
it's
yeah
true.
All right, okay, you have the same standards that we
that
have for
life.
Ourselves.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, go ahead and send me any links to events coming up or contact information or anything like that.
Yeah.
I will get that posted in the show notes for this show. If people want to either go see your existing shows or hire you for some other things, they will know how to do that. And if you ever do get a website figured out, send that to us. We'll get that posted as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a URL. It goes to my LinkedIn account currently. I'll send it to you.
If you get something, when you get something polished up with your performer resume or anything like that on it, let us know. We will absolutely get that posted.
Yeah.
I am more than happy to give circus performers more work. So,
thank you.
We're going to take a break, and we will be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brandon Patton was kind enough to give us the music for this episode and every episode. You can see what he's up to at brandonpatton.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, but especially you can help us out by rating our show. Check out our merch. You can go to society6.com/AON podcast.
If you guys like what you heard, you can visit us on our website at aonpodcast.com. If you want to talk to us directly, you can send us an email at either Jenna, Salsa, or James at aonpodcast.com, or collectively at feedback@aonpodcast.com.
And we're back. I'm Salsa.
I'm James.
I'm Sarah.
And it's time for a Fast Five.
Fast Five.
Today's Fast Five comes to us from James.
All right. So, Salsa who had all of this time to get the noise-making box, goes and gets the noise-making box.
I'm getting tangled up in my cable. Sorry. Hold on.
I'm going to give myself a mustache with my braid tails.
All right. Yep.
Makes it look like I have a mustache.
Beautiful. I'm untangled.
Yeah. Oh, good. All right. We're good. All right.
I had a cable crisis.
Cable crisis would be an amazing X-Men side story. Yeah. So, Fast Five. Question number one. Eject or sweep?
Eject. It's just more drama.
And that's true.
Sweep, because I like brooms as a prop.
Brooms are a great prop. That's very wise. I think I'm going to choose eject, but that's because I know what the context is. I tried not to look as I was writing, but no. All right, so we've each chosen. And then question number two. Health or symptom? Health or symptom?
Symptom.
Yeah?
Also symptom, just because the way you were enunciating it was nice.
Putting the emphasis on that syllable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that.
All right. I think I'm going to choose health.
To the company?
Yeah. And one of my friends. One of my lass? Lass, that's what it is.
Yes, all because right. Lass rhymes with glass better than friends.
So does friends if you're drunk enough. one of my friends.
All out of one glens.
We're getting into a weird... You don't want to drink it out of the same glands that... well, maybe you do. I shouldn't kink shame.
Depends on what it is, yeah.
I won't kink shame.
Glandular excretions could be, you know, you get the hormone cocktail in there, it could really make some interesting things happen.
What is the name of that group? They did Out Comes the Evil. Shit. I was going to do is the name of my Lords of Acid cover band. Hormone Cocktail is my Lords of Acid cover band. All right. Fucked that right up. Okay, so... All right. So... Number three. Trust or fight?
Fight.
Trust.
That was a very divisive question. I'm gonna say trust. Shocking, no one. I think probably. Yeah.
I am going to fight for people's rights rather than trust that it'll eventually figure itself out.
Ooh, shit! With that context, whoa. I would also choose fight.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. All right. So. But I, given this, I'm gonna say trust. So, question number four: big or little?
Little.
Big.
I think I'm gonna choose. I think I'm going to choose big for this one. Yeah. I think I'm going to choose big for this one. It's difficult not saying more about what I think the context is.
What do you think the context is?
Right, yeah. You know.
Remember when we started this podcast with on the topic of concussions?
No, I don't. Somewhere Jenna is shaking her fist and saying TBIs are not a joke, and she's correct.
No, they're not a joke. Making fun of people at making fun of Jenna. There we go.
That's something we can all get behind. She's going to listen to this episode. I'm going to get a message over Facebook that will literally be on fire when I open it.
You're going to get that message. I'm the one saying it.
We both will. You understand that we both get punished. This is like you keep hitting me, so mom's going to turn the van around because, and neither of us gets to go.
Because, James, I'm the instigator, but you're the one that doesn't stop.
I'm the insta-crocodile? Okay. So that's what I'm going with.
I don't know what's going
question,
on anymore.
Question number 5. Issue or continuation? Issue or continuation?
Continuation.
Yeah. Any particular thought process behind this?
I've been feeling like there's a lot of languishing happening lately, and I'd like to find motivation to continue things. So that's why.
I have a lot more issues than I have continuations.
Well, there is certainly that.
I'm going to go with issue because when I am consuming a piece of media, a TV show or something like that, if it is an individualized, self-contained unit, I can jump in and out at any point and still know what's going on. But if it's a continuation of something that's already gone before and I've missed it, then I've just missed it. And although things are different now with streaming services where you can kind of go back on things, usually when I'm consuming things, I'm not the kind of person who is like every day at 2:30 I am going to be watching the new episode of Lost or whenever it was that it came out. I never understood people that were able to keep up with shows like that. It was just like
I've only been able to do that once or twice.
I want a show where I might catch it every third week, and it's just like it's a separate self-contained issue or a comic book where I can get an issue rather than a continuation and just kind of not know what's going on.
And Salsa is not worried about spoilers, so this works out very well for him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Where the rest of us who enjoy things...
No, that's the thing, is I do enjoy it. I still enjoy it. Y'all are like, I don't enjoy this anymore because somebody told me how it ended. I'm like, I still enjoy it. I don't have a problem with it, y'all.
I think it's that it creates a different... enjoyment. You know, if you're watching the movie and someone tells you ahead of time, you're just dead the whole time.
Your enjoyment can be ruined. Mine is not. So who enjoys it more now?
Yeah. Well, ideally, both of us.
Well, ideally, yes.
Because...
You're the one who turned this into a competition, motherfucker.
I want Competition Motherfucker to be a stage name.
That's my Samuel L. Jackson cover band?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But Samuel L. Jackson is still the front man for it, because of course he is.
Yeah.
All right, I chose issue. So, Now that we have heard the questions, we should hear the context.
What a twist.
Yeah. So, question number one, eject or sweep. Which of these activities is more likely to make you feel a kind of zen? Making room on a shelf, physical shelf, for cartridge games and movies, or curating space on a hard drive for games and movies that are most important to you? Which of these is most likely to be a zen activity for you?
Wow. I thought for sure this was going to be a Top Gun versus Karate Kid question.
Ooh, oh, dang, that would have been great.
I think the physical act of actually clearing space and, like, methodically handling an object and putting it somewhere and, like, going through things like that is much more zen than something that feels akin to data entry or, like, I don't know, organizing a hard drive is not as zen for me.
Hmm. I think I am a lot more likely to organize my data. And there's... I'm definitely more satisfied with the results of organizing physical media. So I picked eject. Also, just I like the physical things, the cartridges. There's something really nice about that.
This is the same picture.
Oh, this also does not distinguish between the two.
Yeah, it's curation of information for me is like I was a library science major. That's whether it's a physical thing or a data thing, curating that information is the same thing. I think I just find curating video game discs and things like that annoying.
Yeah, I was going to say, you strike me as a person who might not want to have a ton of physical things.
I don't, yeah. Like,
taking up space.
I only buy, like I only own a couple dozen DVDs, and they are movies that I really, really like. Like, they are movies that I am going to watch a billion times. If it's a movie that I thought was okay, I'm probably just going to watch it digitally again. I think that just having stuff that I need to physically move around just is clutter that I don't like, whereas cleaning up digital stuff makes me happy. So I'll go with sweep.
All right. Yeah, I figured that might be the case, but I thought it was a good thing because I know that you're also a person who enjoys not necessarily memorabilia, but objects of importance.
Yeah, they need to be particularly important. Not just like a random kitsch from a vacation.
The you know, collection of hundreds of video games that I have are actually winnowed down from to the ones that kind of mean the most to me. So, yeah. Question number two. Health or symptom in video games, which damage meter is less distressing to you? To see a health percentage or a number of hearts or a bar, your health, right? Or the symptoms of taking damage, that there's like blood on the screen, your character is breathing raggedly, you're not moving as fast, those kinds of things. Which one of those is less distressing to you?
Less distressing?
Is this assuming that only one of those exists? You have one or the other?
In most video games, it's one or the other, because in one style of video game, you have a set amount of health and it may recover over time, but you're kind of watching it recover slowly over time. And in the other one, those are usually shooter games where you have to like duck behind things. And
if you've ever played like Red Dead Redemption or the new...
No, but I've played Amnesia, which is...
very similar.
Yeah, that's a symptomatic game.
Yeah.
I don't like those.
No, also that game is just not for me.
No.
I keep playing it and I don't know why.
You keep playing it?
Yeah.
I'm in the worst part right now. I started and it just holds no interest for me.
Really? Is it scary to you, Salsa?
No.
Really?
What?
Huh. That's so impressive.
Do you not fear being alone?
No.
Or going insane?
I love being alone. Are you kidding me?
And he loves going insane. Both of those things.
No, like video games that have symptoms.
Yeah.
I just, like, whatever. Like, as far as... It's not like... It's supposed to be this visceral thing, and I just go, oh, I guess I'm low on health. It doesn't bother me. Whereas seeing that number, like, seeing that bar start to creep down, that's for me as I start going, oh, shit, I should probably find a health potion or something like that. But yeah, having the screen go red, I just like, oh, I guess I'm low on health.
I thought that that symptom was more distressing to me. Because like there is that like visceral animal feeling to it rather than a sense of detachment and like comfort symbolic representation, but also wandering around a dungeon or something like that missing half a heart makes me so upset.
Yeah.
It's just like I'm not at full health.
It's too abstract for me.
Oh.
I know that my health is low, but I don't know what that means. So for me, it's too abstract. It's just like, I guess my health is low. But if I look at a bar and that thing says 12%, then my analytical brain goes, holy shit, I have 12% left. That is a number, that is a concrete number that my brain can lock into and go, that's a problem.
I find comfort in the absolute... like knowledge of this is how much health I have left.
Mm. Yeah.
Instead of just kind of wondering how close I am to dying with symptomatic.
There's that. Yeah. Because those are usually a little bit vague, if not extremely vague.
Or about like in what Silent it, what Hill.
Oh, like, yeah.
You don't know how bad you're doing, really.
Exactly. You have no idea. So,
yeah.
I hate that.
It doesn't bother me because I don't realize how close I am.
Yeah.
Ignorance is bliss.
Basically.
That's how Salsa lives his life. That's why he's such a happy guy.
I know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Question number 3. Trust or fight? In a mystery story, when a new character is introduced to the main character, are you hoping that they are a new friend or accomplice, I guess? Or are you sizing them up as a killer and like as a bad person and the opposition?
So,
like, what is an example of a game that you're talking? I'm not.
Well, not even a video game, but just like in a mystery story, like a mystery novel or a TV show or a movie, like a Father Brown mystery or a Brother Cadfile or
I assume everybody's a killer in those things.
Poirot. Yeah. I kind of start out trusting everyone. But I also, like, the brain is always ticking away and saying, like, oh, okay, that person was in this place, that person was in this place. It just files that stuff away, not accusatorily, but just, like, because I know that I am watching a puzzle and that I want to solve it, it's filing all of that stuff away. And then when someone is likely to be the villain of the piece, that's when I start like scrutinizing them for that kind of thing. But that also leads me to not accept the easy answer that they usually provide at the beginning, the red herring. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, yeah, of course that person shouted, you'll see, I'll show you, I'll kill you. It's probably not that person. Because otherwise, like, mystery fucking solved.
Yeah,
that was easy.
It's never that guy, it's always the butler. Duh.
The closest thing of recent that comes to mind to me for a mystery is a D&D one-shot that I was a part of that was, like, a Lovecraftian-style mystery game that, you know, Christoph Rochelle?
Yeah, one of the gargoyles.
Yeah, that he ran. He ran that.
That sounds so good.
And I felt like I was approaching everyone as a friend, but secretly hoping that they were the killer, just because it's fun.
Oh.
I mean, like, to be buddy-buddy with somebody and then find out that they're turning on everyone is pretty exciting in a D&D game.
Sure. Well, and in a mystery story, that's kind of the point, I guess.
Are you familiar with Vampire the Masquerade?
Yeah.
And Werewolf?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, years ago, I had a friend who was DMing for her younger brother and his friends. Because they were getting into gaming, but they were still new to it. And so she was basically introducing them to gaming, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were still pretty raw, but they were learning. And she was like, she came to me and she was like, okay, I need to teach them that the GM is not their friend. Because this is an important lesson to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So I showed up as a one-off character. Basically as a one-time NPC. But they were all playing as vampires. And I was secretly a werewolf. And so I showed up and I became their friends. They like stumbled upon me and were like, oh, this guy's in trouble. We should help him. And so they helped me and they were like, yes, I am a perfectly normal human.
Perfectly normal, exactly, you know, American, like, vampire.
You know, and obviously I was a player character, and so they just trusted immediately that I was who I said I was. And got, you know, through halfway through this campaign until I betrayed them and rocked their world. And yeah, and it was so much fun. It was so much fun. And I got my ass handed to me because I was supposed to get my ass handed to me, but yeah. I did a lot of damage in the process. And they didn't trust the GM after that. It was like, this, I love you very much, but this is a thing you need to learn, is the GM is not your friend.
Yeah.
So, that was a lot of fun.
HR is there for the interest of the company, not for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Question number 4. Big or little? If you were to sell a story to a major media group, would you rather have it be a sprawling, epic, multi-generational story? Or would you rather have it be a show / movie that focuses on a small cast in a few locations?
I'm going to switch to small.
Big, giant, epic thing, or small and more like character-driven small thing.
Yeah, small.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, I respect things like the MCU and those big sweeping epics. I respect them a ton, but that's way too much fucking work for me. Like, those way too many moving pieces in that. Like, people like George R.R. Martin and what was the guy? The Wheel of Time guy. You know what I'm talking about.
Jordan.
Robert Jordan. Robert Jordan.
Yes, okay.
Like, I enjoyed consuming that media, but to try to create that, that's way too much. Way too much for me to be able to hold in my head. You know, I appreciate a self-contained story that has an end.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons that I, like, when people are looking for good anime, I will wholeheartedly endorse Trigun or Cowboy Bebop Naruto or Bleach or One Piece, which is now at a 1,000 episodes.
Yeah, it's been going for 20 some years or whatever it is.
Because I feel like I think there are epics that do have a story to tell. They have an overarching story. They already know where they're going. They know how they want to get there. They've got stuff drawn out, and they take that path, and it happens. As much as I can't fucking stand Rowling as a human being, Harry Potter honestly did seem to start at an intentional place and end at an intentional place, and it took 7 books to get there, and that's kind of epic proportions. 9 films, whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now we've got the expanded
an entire universe.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it that I, again, disgusting human being, but that model of bigness is something that I think is really important, that it doesn't just have to be the continuing adventures of dragging that shit out.
Lord of the Rings and the Tolkien.
Lord of the Rings is also a good example.
Making the Hobbit 3 films was too much.
Unnecessary.
It was too much. People who've listened to this podcast for a while already know this, but I am a big fan of British sitcoms. And one of the most beloved British sitcoms of all time is Fawlty Towers. There are 12 episodes of it. Two 6-episode seasons.
Yeah.
That's it. A lot of those British sitcoms that are big, like The Vicar of Dibley, I think is 3 6-episode seasons or something like that, you know.
Father Ted
is 4 seasons, I think, of 6
it's
episodes.
Minuscule.
But anyway, it is they go in, they tell the story they want to tell, it's done, and then you're done. You don't try to drag that shit out.
And you want more, but that's okay. Yeah, I honestly feel that Firefly is as...
I was just going to bring up Firefly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect, go for it.
But like,
yeah, I mean, I was just watching it again. The other day, and feeling like I wish there was more, but I'm not gonna kill anybody.
But
it
concludes in a place that you're happy with.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
what?
I think that if we had gotten into like season 6, season 7 of Firefly, that it would just be like, a marathon.
Yeah.
When I was going through and watching all of the Marvelverse, including the TV shows.
Yeah.
You know, and then getting into the Arrowverse and the DC side, but there'd be like, you know, seasons with like 24 episodes. You know what I mean? Like, Arrow was a great show. I really enjoyed Arrow. But
follow-up question, was it?
I enjoyed it.
Okay.
As seasons went on, it got worse. It absolutely got worse as time went on. But,
right.
Like, the first season was okay. But even then, it was like, we're getting into episode 20. We're getting into episode 21 and 22. You're just like, I am so tired. Just finish already. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Just be done already. I am so exhausted with trying to pay attention to everything. Just, like, give me 6 episodes. Say what you needed to say. and mm-hmm. wrap that shit up.
I would tend to agree. But I also feel like having a very large story to tell, mm-hmm. If it's done really well, can be amazing.
Definitely.
Can be perfect. Yeah.
But this wasn't about are there stories out there? This was if I'm selling a story.
So,
and
if I were going to tell a story,
if I was going to tell a story, it's going to be short and concise, and it's going to finish, and I'm going to be done, and I'm going to walk away and be like, "Cool, I'm out."
I think you might have changed my mind about my own question. Because there is something, there's a thing that I've been writing for 15 years that is 13 or fewer episodes. Specifically for the reason of, like, you have something to say and you say it and you get in there, set up, middle, punchline, done. Which makes one piece of Shaggy Dog joke, and I think that's amazing in the worst possible way. Mm-hmm. 1,000 episode, they're setting up for a pun. I can tell it's got all the ingredients of a really miserable, awful punchline, and I hope that it's followed by a rim shot. And that it's just like 5 seconds into the episode and then the credits roll and they're like, the end. That's it. No more. Thanks for watching. I would go back and watch all 1,000 episodes if they end it on a really shit joke.
So what you're saying is if episode 2000, they win the war, and the guy goes, "We won peace." Credits.
I'm on it. I honestly, I would go back. I would do it, and I would make other people watch it. Is the brutal part about that is that I would make other people watch it. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. All right. Question number 5.
Boy, how long were we on that one?
Question number 5, issue or continuation. A lot of new shows have come out during the pandemic. Do you prefer the ones that just drop all of the episodes? Continuation, just you continue and you just watch the whole thing in like 2 fucking days. Or do you prefer it to be an like weekly issue? You get the episode, you have time to digest it, you are hungry for the next episode.
I mean,
or do you just like the buffet?
It doesn't matter one way or the other because I'm not going to watch it for another 2 months anyway.
It's legitimate.
I feel like it depends on what else I've got going on and how productive I want to be in my life. Like, I was reading Lore Olympus.
Sure.
And that comes out weekly. Mm-hmm. And I binge read all of it up until what was current instead of doing schoolwork for some amount of time. And so I feel like
it is a lot more fun than schoolwork.
It is a lot more fun than schoolwork, but it would have been better if I had just read one a week.
And never caught up.
I don't know.
And always been like 900 episodes behind.
Until it finishes. Yeah. I don't know. I also kind of like the slow pace of having to wait a week.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice.
I don't know what I'm going to be doing next week. So just give me everything now. That way I can watch it in my own time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I see...
You're sitting, it looks like you have a halo of fire. It's really good.
It's great.
Yeah, it's very Renaissance.
Hold on, let me bring up my camera here. Yeah.
All right, back to the business. Okay. All right.
Anyway, if you give me one episode now, and I'm mm-hmm. not busy this week, I can watch one episode, and then I don't know when I'm going to be able to get back to it. If you give all of them to me now, and I'm busy next week, but I'm not busy this week, I can actually watch it in my own time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's giving me... If I want to wait a week to watch the next episode, I can do that. That's my choice.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives me the choice.
When it comes to things like Loki or The Mandalorian, I really like the culture and the fandom and the excitement that gets built up around it, and I think it gives people to really savor it. Mm-hmm. And it has the thing that everyone actually likes about Christmas. I mean, it's the Jesus stuff. All right, fine. But the anticipation is what people are most hungry for, because like you get the things and you're like, oh great, or you order a package from Amazon and you're like, oh, when's it gonna get here, I'm gonna love this so much, and then you open it and you're like, oh, I have the thing, and then you set it down, and it's nice to have that thing, but it's not exciting in that same mm-hmm. way. People love anticipation, and if it were not for the risk, the only stressful part of that is the risk of having someone go, well, yeah, in episode 4, it turns out, you know, that came out 5 minutes ago. It turns out that the person was wearing a wire the entire time, and that's all of this stuff. Gigantic spoiler for whatever thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can watch it, but some of that impact, some of the intended impact has changed or is gone for you. If you are a person who cares about spoilers, which Salsa does not.
I felt that way watching Westworld
when
it was coming out.
Like, did
I
people...
liked that it came out weekly, but you have to be really careful on like Reddit. And
oh yeah.
Where it's fun to discuss theories about the show, but mm-hmm. it's hard to avoid spoilers.
Yeah.
And eager to talk about what just happened.
Yeah, if it weren't for the risk of having it ruined for me in that way, not like really actually ruined in most cases, but just to have the shine taken off of it in that way, I would definitely go. I would choose issue. I would choose week to week episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I agree. All right. That is our Fast Five.
Woo! If you would like to send in a Fast Five, please send two emails to salsa@a1podcast.com. Please send the first email having the choices, and the second one email having the context. Repeat those choices in there so we don't have to bounce back and forth. You know how this works. Who's got a shout out?
I have.
Cool.
I want to give a shout out to The Fringe. This is, I think, the first year that Jenna hasn't been on a wait list. One. Two.
And her show is not about the wait list. I'm so disappointed.
I'm a little heartbroken about that too, but I want to give a shout out to them for doing a lot of their stuff online still. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are getting out there doing stuff. Things appear to be opening up and everything like that, but it's getting scary again, still more. And I think that giving people a safe avenue for entertainment is, especially local entertainment, mm-hmm. Is kind of a big deal, and I appreciate it. But more just that Jenna wasn't on a wait list, and it's, I think that we can crush her fun by saying that it's ruined her streak.
Yeah, that's, that makes me happy. I'm going to give my shout out to my wife. She deserves it really a lot this time.
Story checks out.
When I came into the house with blood streaming down my arm, you know, she immediately jumped into action and, you know, got me gauze and Neosporin and bandages and stuff like that. Just took care of things immediately. So, kudos. Thank you, honey, for taking care of me when I need to be taken care of.
Yeah, thank you, Raiderly.
My shout-out goes to my parents. My dad for staying super positive despite going through chemo and a bunch of really tough cancer treatment, and my mom for, I don't know, being as much of a caretaker as she can be for him and for me. They'll never hear this, but they're doing great, all things considered. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
All right. Has anybody got anything to plug?
I have. I'm going to go to the website right now.
Okay.
And see if the Bryant Lake Bowl is currently selling tickets to the first. They are. Selling tickets to the first Vilification Tennis show to be in person on stage in well over a year. We had 17 shows online.
Wow.
And we're still going to be doing online shows, but this one is intended to be in person. This is going to be Friday, August 27th. I am letting people know right now, because seating will be limited for the obvious reasons. We want to keep people safe, even as we make them like pee themselves with laughter. I'll be in that show. I'm really excited about it. And I hope that a ton of people will come and see it. It is much earlier than usual. It will be at 7 p.m. instead of 10 p.m., which we're hoping will make it more accessible. And also, just the Bryant Lake Bowl could use your love.
Hear, hear.
And that gives you plenty of time before the show and also after the show to sample their delicious food and drinks.
All right. This coming Thursday at, I believe, 7:30, 8:30 maybe, is online Big Fun Radio Fun Time at the Fringe Festival. Just go to the Fringe Festival website. I will have a link to that, obviously, on the show notes. But go to the Fringe website, look for Big Fun Radio Fun Time, get tickets there. So you do need to get your tickets through the Fringe website in order to watch this show. So yeah, check it out. It's going to be funny. We have a big, huge, epic script that is basically going to be the whole show. Instead of putting, you know, together a show that does four different scripts, this is basically going to be one big, broad, sweeping, huge script.
Not little episodes. Gigantic, epic
big
thing.
Continuation. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's different. We've never done it this way before, so.
Yeah.
It'll still be interspersed with things, but it's a much bigger script than we've dealt with in the past.
Yeah.
And then you can see me at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival coming up in just a couple weeks.
Oh yeah, there's that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I won't be there this year.
No. What will you be doing one more time?
I have state fair shows with Arts Affair Benjamin and I will be performing under Yellow Apple Circus at the West End Market at the Minnesota State Fair on August 26th, 27th, and 28th from 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. And come find us there. And then also in September, on September 28th, I will be performing with Tom Wall and Benjamin Domascu in the city of Hastings, Minnesota, at Levy Park from 6 to 7 p.m.
Beautiful Hastings.
Oh, yeah. And that park is right by the river. It is gorgeous.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any final thoughts?
Yes, I would like to say bye-bye, I love you, bye-bye-bye.
In that case, thank you so very, very much to everybody who's been listening to this episode. Thank you to our very, very special guest, Sarah!
Woo!
You have been fantastic. I could talk to you for hours, and will probably at some point.
And have, and will do again.
Thank you to James for the Fast Five.
Anytime.
On behalf of myself and James and Sarah, and I guess Jenna as well, eat the fucking cake.
Take it away, Salsa.
Cha.
Cha, 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 cha.
Verbal Jazz Fingers.
Verbal Jazz Fingers is the name of my new Led Zeppelin cover band.